UWA-517, do you want to report a UFO? Over.
Negative. We don't want to report.
Ares 31, do you wish to report a UFO? Over.
Negative. We want to report one of those either.
Ares 31, do you wish to file a report of any kind? Over.
I wouldn't know what kind of report to file, sir.
Ares 31, me neither.
There's 71 Papa Golf, go ahead.
And was there anybody above us that passed us like 30 seconds ago?
There's 71 Papa Golf, negative.
Okay. Stop this. It's a UFO.
Yeah. Hey, it's Murder 1095. Yeah, something just passed over. Don't know what it was, but it's at least 2,000-3,000 feet above us. Yeah, it passed right over the top of us.
911.
You guys busy? Did we just call about the UFOs we saw?
Mm-hmm.
They're out there, taking airplanes.
And it is such. Bob, I swear to God, 4 calls in on an unidentified object over Liberty.
4 calls.
4 calls on an unidentified flying object.
Let's not take a look. All right, we'll check it out.
Welcome to UFO Chronicles, a place where people share their experiences of the strange and unexplained. If you've had an encounter and would like to be on the show, you can email me at ufochronicles@gmail.com.
Hello everyone and welcome to the show, wherever in the world you are joining us from. How are you all? I'm Nick Hunter and this is the UFO Chronicles podcast. Today's first guest is Joshua from Ontario, Canada, sharing some paranormal experiences from his time working in a video store. DVDs would fall off the shelves, TVs would turn on and off and switch channels, and a scary encounter with a 7-foot-tall apparition. Do ghosts watch movies? It would seem so. Then we'd leave Canada for New Mexico in the US
to have Poncho join us
and share his paranormal experiences that started as a kid, when it would seem he was watched over and protected by a spirit he named Casper, and a strange encounter while night fishing on Santa Cruz Lake. Joshua up next. If you enjoy listening to the podcast and would like to help support my work, there is a couple of ways to do this. Either you can join Patreon and become a patron of the show for as little as $5 a month, or you can donate via PayPal. And if you like, you can set up monthly reoccurring payments. All links to support the podcast are below in the show notes and on the website. Any help is extremely appreciated, and it helps the show to continue running. Now, on with the show. Joshua, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Nick. I'm excited to be on. Yeah, wow. Nervous and excited all at once.
Good stuff. Don't be nervous. Everything is fine. It's great to have you join us today, and you're calling from Ontario, Canada.
Yes, a little bit overcast.
A little bit overcast today, is it?
Yeah, they're calling for a lot of snow. And if the up and down is any indication in terms of temperature, it's going to be a wild one.
Right, yeah. I think they're predicting that for the UK as well. Now, Joshua, you have some paranormal experiences to share with our listeners. Would you like to start at the beginning, please, sir?
Yeah. We'll start off by saying I've always been a believer of the paranormal. From a very, very early age, around like 3-4 years old, I had experiences I didn't quite understand. Not a lot of them, but enough. Things like apparition stuff out of the corner of your eye. I've always been one to have a bit of a lucid dreaming. And I consider myself a bit of a sensitive and a catalyst. And most people know what a sensitive is that listen to your show and podcast, but not many might understand my term catalyst. Pardon me. I consider myself catalyst as someone who augments other people's paranormal phenomenon. So when I'm around other people that things seem to happen to, it seems to ramp itself up a little bit more, make it a little more apparent, if you will. So I'll start by saying I'm not sure of the correct date, but it occurred around 2004, 2006. And my experience took place in a video store in a city called Belleville in Ontario, Canada. I was not the only one to witness these paranormal experiences. There was about 8 staff, half of which could probably verify the encounters. And I'll tell you what happened. So on any given night, DVDs would fall off the shelves. And this might seem pretty mundane and explainable, but given all the shelves were black and they were angled back to actually prevent the DVDs from falling, it would suggest there was some other force at play. And the DVDs wouldn't just simply fall to the floor. They'd literally leap off the shelf. They'd clear the angled flat portion to fall flat on the floor. And if it was quiet and you're nearby, you could actually hear the slapping sound as they hit, which to me indicated, I mean, they didn't hit on a corner or spine. They landed flat faced. And just about every time that this would occur, you could differentiate a sliding DVD from one that had been, I'll say, tossed or you know, leaped off the shelf. The interesting thing is it never actually seemed to happen in front of anybody. It was the corner of your eye or behind you sort of thing. And I also say that the DVDs weren't on the front of the shelf. It was an empty case that just had the advertisement of the movie or the game or whatever. So those cases were empty with multiple DVDs behind the artwork case. And usually it was that artwork case that did, you know, fly off and flop down. And it was odd because she'd be working and then you hear this kind of slap and flop and look behind and there'd be DVD. You'd turn around and pick it up. Nobody would be there. Nothing to explain it. It was very random. There were also 3 TVs, and I should mention that they were really old CRT TVs, none of the flat screen ones. They constantly played movies and gaming trailers and sat on a loop. 2 of the TVs would change channels at night. I don't know why I never saw the 3rd one do it, and that was the one at the front of the store. It was always the one at the back of the store. We didn't have remotes for the the TVs. They were mounted on the wall, almost out of reach. You had to kind of reach up and to change channels or turn them on or anything like that. There was one TV in particular that seemed fond of changing constantly. The channels would start to index up, then it would stop for a bit, and then continue, and then stop, and then the channels would index down, and then it would stop, and then the channels would go random, just random numbers, all really wonky. And then that would stop, and then the TV would turn off by itself. And there was no infrared source nearby for this. There's nobody like playing a prank. There's no way to get to that TV. It was isolated in a back corner and it would just randomly do this. And you'd walk up and you'd be like, okay, well, you know, maybe the buttons were sticking. Oh no, the buttons weren't sticking. And you know, what else could be causing it? No idea. And there was one night where it turned on and off so much and it was so annoying to the staff, we ended up unplugging it because we just couldn't deal with it going on and off and on and off and turning channels the whole time we were there. So I was the usual closing floor manager at the time, so I was the one there at night that you know, we're closed up around midnight for most of the time, 11 midnight, 1 or 2 I think was the latest I've been there. So fairly late in the evening, I would be counting daily till this one time, and I was in the back office counting tills, and the back office was separated by 2 doors to the the floor of the sales floor with a back inventory room between us. And there was a small security camera set up which showed the back of the sales floor. And at this time, there was one other employee up front who was busy mopping the floors for the start of the next day. I'm assuming like midnight around there. And no one else was in the building. The front door had been locked. And so I was in the back, busy counting the money. And as I'm counting the money, the TV screen's in front of me, the security camera's in front of me, and I saw movement out of the corner of my eye on the video screen. So I immediately stopped what I was doing to look at the screen. And in the video feed, there was a shadow figure of a man. He stood about 7 feet tall, seemingly dressed in a dark trench coat, wearing some sort of hat. The man then proceeded to walk through two shelves of DVDs, like they weren't there. And he walked through them at a bit of an angle, not perpendicular to the shelf or parallel to the shelf, but about like a 30 degree angle. And then he just vanished from the video, from my sight. My coworker, who was mopping the floor, then dropped the mop and he ran back into the inventory room, which he yanked open and closed with a slam when he was on the other side of it. And just to tell you how terrified this guy was, it had an automatic door closer attached to the top of the frame. So if you ever tried to close one of those doors that has that automatic door closer, it takes a while for that door closer to actually close. And if you try and force it, there's some resistance. This guy overpowered the mechanism and actually was able to slam the door. So he was pretty upset at that point. I already had the door to the office open into the inventory room, so I saw him come in. And he was white as a ghost when I looked at him. And he turned to me and said, "You can't go out there." And I stood up and asked him what he saw. And he just shook his head and repeated the phrase, "You can't go out there." And I asked him, I said, "Did you see a tall man in black?" And he just nodded. And I approached the door and he reiterated, "You can't go out there." I said, "Well, if there's someone out there I need to know, I have to check." I replied, "We don't understand. There's something out there." And I explained it was okay. I knew how to deal with these things. He didn't want me to open the door, though. And a few seconds ticked by with him just staring off into space, looking for all the world like a deer caught in the headlights. And I said, "Like, I have to go out there. You can stay here if you wish." And he says, "No bloody way, I'm staying here by myself." So I cautiously opened the door and I scanned the room. There was nothing no one in my line of sight anyway. And I stepped out of the doorway. My coworker reached behind the door and grabbed a broom or a mop or something of that sort. I can't really remember the detail, but I remember him grabbing it and kind of putting it in front of him in a defensive posture as a defensive measure. And he kind of made some noise, like, "Don't go out there," kind of thing. And so I slowly walked the length of the back wall where I could see down all the aisles. And someone could duck behind the shelving units, and so I had to be sure. My coworker didn't stray far from my back. So we encircled the entire floor and didn't notice anything out of place. I even checked the front door to make sure it was still locked. So at this point, he's still really upset and looking pretty much terrified of what he just saw. So we walked behind the counter where we stopped to talk. And I went into an explanation of the paranormal, having had some history and looking at it for my entire life. And he was a young guy, coming up on his 20s, I think. So he didn't have a lot of experience with that sort of thing. And as we were talking about it, he started to calm down a little more. Color kind of came back to him. And we started to discuss some versions of events, what he saw, what I saw. And his version pretty much matched mine, just from a different point of view. He saw a tall man, kind of, we'll say, clothed in darkness, walk through two shelves and vanish. And then as we were discussing the event, I happened to mention that I felt there was a portal. I remember at the beginning, I said I was kind of a bit of a sensitive. And I felt this portal was located in the wall behind us. And as I started to discuss this and voice my opinion on it, everything started up again. It was midsummer and there was no air conditioning in the building, but there was a floor fan pointed behind the counter to cool off the staff towards the cashiers, towards the cash. And basically something unseen decided to instantly spin the fan 180 degrees to face the opposite direction. And if anybody's ever moved a fan quickly by mistake, you know that those spinning blades make contact with the cage and you can clearly hear the effect of that. And that's what occurred. The instantly after the fan spun around, the double glass doors on the popcorn maker opened up with such force that they slammed against the case, shuttering the whole entire cabinet. So the fan spun around, and as it spun, it clicked and banged against the cage. The glass doors flew open, slamming themselves back onto the hinges where they rested, back onto the other side of the glass. And of course, that was it. That was the straw. My coworker lost his wits. He shrieked, dropped his broom or mop, whatever he had, and then he made a break for the door. However, the door is still locked. So if you've ever seen a hamster in a cage trying to get out, yeah, that was literally him. He was pawing out the glass door, looking back at me, whimpering. He couldn't say anything. He couldn't vocalize anything except for this whimpering sound. And, you know, it just came to mind that he looked like a stuck hamster in a cage, and I couldn't help myself. So I laughed, and it seemed comical to me. I know he didn't appreciate it at the time. And I can't really remember exactly how it all turned out. I think I did let him outside, but he did come back in at some point because he was concerned about my well-being. And we talked about it, and I finished up the daily task. And I mean, it was obvious he didn't want to be there anymore. He was, you know, looking in all the corners and just trying to find where this came from and trying to find a rational source of what he experienced. And then he just says to me, like, you laughed. And I said, yeah, I'm sorry, but it's kind of funny to watch, like, you know, pawing at the glass, right? Yeah. He's like, yeah, but you were laughing the whole time when it started. You were laughing. And it wasn't until he clarified that statement and I realized he was right. I had laughed at the start of the paranormal events. I didn't know what to say or think, but he was right. To me, it was one of those moments in my mind where I don't know why I responded that way. So anyway, I knew he was kind of starting to lose it again and, you know, kind of freak out. So I made some inane comments that kind of calm him down and ground them back. And we finished up real quick and bugged out of there. And later I found there was a list of businesses in that location that never seemed to do well there. I don't know if it was because I'm looking back at it all, but people's personalities and characters seemed to also change while they worked there. It was a very strange workplace. Like I said, people seemed to not be themselves when they were there. They had various things they would do that were out of character. And that's the tale.
I must admit, I did have a little chuckle. It's like a hamster in a cage.
That was the thing that came to me, was just this picture of this. He was a large man, like large frame, and he's not a person to be scared of anything or anybody. So it's just this kind of big, you know, cuddly guy, and he's just trying to get out. That's all he wanted. I just need out. And that was kind of what was running in his head, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I feel for the guy. I mean, it's fight or flight, isn't it? In his case, it was try and get away, try and get out.
Absolutely. He didn't know what had happened. He didn't know how to process the information. But he was scared.
And did he look for different employment after that?
You know what? He did eventually, but he did stay. And I think I kind of started him on a new journey of the paranormal and exploration thereof. His belief system up to that point was very static. His parents were religious. And then after that, he completely changed the way he thought about life and how he, you know, things interacted with it.
Well, so something positive came out of his ordeal, you know, so, it takes an event to happen, something to happen for people to go, oh, hang on, you know, this is completely different to what I'm used to. There's something, there's blatantly something more out there than what we're told. And if he did grow up in a very religious family, he may not be aware of all this stuff that does go on.
That's exactly what happened. Yeah. It just opened up a new experience for him. And he suddenly was, you know, like, wow, this, you know, there are things out there that aren't explained that you cannot necessarily put a label on and address in a nice, neat little file folder.
Absolutely. I mean, we won't name him, but if he is listening, I'm sure you know who you are. Get in contact. I'd like to hear your version of events. When you first saw the figure on the security cameras, had you felt stuff in that building before?
I always felt there was something there. It with the stuff falling off the shelf, with the channels changing, you definitely had the feeling that there was an entity about. I really thought there was something watching. It just seemed dark and oppressive at times. And that was my first real manifestation, other than those two other instances of the DVDs falling, the TV turning off and on. I'd say that's the most active one for sure.
There you've got a visual. You saw it on the camera, plus your colleague saw it with his own eyes, much to his distress.
Yes.
And you had poltergeist activity going on there. You had objects moving.
And what I found interesting, too, was the fact that I could see it through the security camera itself. So, you know, it suggests that perhaps it wasn't all in your head in terms of a manifestation that was, you know, directly affecting one individual person. You know, I only saw it through a video camera system. He saw it directly. And the fact that our stories matched up and how I approached it after the experience was to identify what he saw without leading him on as to what I saw. So I just said, okay, what did you see? I didn't say, hey, there was, you know, this big, tall, black cloaked guy I didn't say any of that. I just said, what did you see? And he described it to me exactly how I saw it, which to me was, you know, a verification that, well, it was there.
Yeah, exactly. Everything happened. It seemed to, you know, it all backed both of you guys up. Got on the camera. He saw it visually. He ran in. He reacted. Then you reacted. Interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
When you'd have the DVDs being knocked off the shelves, was there any particular preference in genre?
That is a really good question. I never even thought to look for that, to analyze that. I'm going to say off the top of my head, I don't think so. And it happened to more than that experience happened to more than just me. There was other younger employees as well that would see it happen. Now, I'm not sure that they would identify it as paranormal. A lot of them would probably just say, oh, it just fell off, you know, and assume that it was because it wasn't properly set or the wind blew them off or something of the sort. But to me, that wasn't possible.
Yeah, judging from the position of the shelves.
Exactly.
I'm sure if I haunted a video store, which you probably won't now because I don't think there's not too many around these days, but I'd probably be going around and I'd probably knock down a few of them on the actors I don't like, and probably most of the romance movies I wouldn't bother with them. They'd be on the floor.
Drag the trash can over first before you knock it off.
Yeah. And what about after? Did anything in particular happen after that?
Well, it kept up with the DVDs and the channel changing all the way through until I quit and went somewhere else. It nothing as extravagant as that ever happened after that. But yeah, definitely the TVs still changed channels. They still turned on and off. There's still DVDs flying off the shelves and flopping on the floor
So still active. Interesting. And like you said, you know, there was, there was businesses that were failing around there. So it could have been the buildings, could have been the land.
Absolutely. I know for a fact that the previous business did not do well, and that's why they closed down. That video store did move locations after quite some time, I think, after I quit. I'm not sure how the new business is doing, but looking back at it, I know there was three businesses that were cited as, you know, saying they didn't do well. And of course, you know, they blame the location and say, well, it's not a good location. You know, nobody wants to stop there. It's, you know, you don't have the traffic you need. But, well, you know, I kind of wonder if there was something else to it as well.
Okay. Now, Joshua, you said you were a sensitive. Had you experiences, you know, similar to this in the past, maybe growing up?
Yes. I have had various, I'll say small experiences. I've seen images of people. I wouldn't call them shadow people, but there'd be people would appear out of the corner of my eye. You know, I notice it and, you know, younger, you dismiss it as a, you know, oh, it's a trick of my imagination. You know, maybe it's the lighting, you know, pareidolia. I've seen things that, you know, it's just on that borderline where you're like unsure. But when I get in with other people, it seems to manifest itself even more. I remember one point there when I was younger in my teenage years, and there was a friend of mine, and we had a couple girlfriends over, and they decided to do the Ouija board. And he didn't want to participate. And of course, they were saying, oh, well, you know, it's, nothing ever happens anyways. It's just all fun. Kind of don't worry about it. He said, nah, I'm just going to sit back. So we did it. And immediately the name that came up, and I can't remember the name, unfortunately, but it, for the three of us, had no contact. But for my friend that stayed out of it, that was his brother that had passed away, which of course then struck a note with everybody once we found that out, and that was that. That end. This individual also had lights, fluorescent lights break. They would explode on him as he walked underneath them as he passed by. One night he was leaving work and there was a row of fluorescent lights, and as he walked, they literally burst about, I don't know how, I'm going to say, like, you know, 10 feet behind him as he walked past. He hurried to his car, drove home, and even the next day, they were still picking up glass on the sidewalk of the business where we had gone. There was another individual, a friend of mine, whose horn on the car was haunted, of all things. He pulled into our driveway, and we're watching a scary show, and we heard this meep, 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 meep. Almost like a Morse code kind of thing. We couldn't figure it out for the longest time. And then lo and behold, we paused the movie and kind of was searching around, and his car horn was going off. Now, again, that might have been a short. That might be all explainable, but these eerie events seem to kind of follow, if you will. And especially in groups, if I'm with another individual, it doesn't seem to react. When you get a larger group together, it seems to take more on. And this time it was, I think there's about six people that when that happened. I'm not sure, but I think I've had encounters with gray aliens in the past. It's one of those things where it's like, I don't know if because I'm interested in the paranormal, you know, it's, I forget the term where you're inducing memory, false memories, because of how you want to think. But at any rate, how I remember it, it was, I was really young, 2 or 3, and I remember calling out. It was a bit of a cliche, a dark and stormy night, and I remember calling out to my parents and they weren't answering, and I had figured out how to climb out of my crib, and I remember climbing out and releasing the rails on the side, and there was a chair nearby I could reach, and I climbed out and went on the chair and looked downstairs, and between the lightning flashes I saw something at the bottom of upstairs that really, really scared me. And then I went up, hid in my crib, and then I remember something at the top of the stairs, and basically that's it. I don't remember anything after that. Now, I say that might be a false memory. I don't know. I was really young at the time. But I do remember details from that house and details my mom says, well, you're really young to remember that. I'm like, yeah, I know. But, you know, it's kind of weird. It really stuck with me. That kind of burned into my subconscious or into my memory, if you will. And kind of show you how, say how involved I am into it. My first date with my girlfriend, who is now my wife, we went to see the premiere of Fire in the Sky. And of course, that's a great date movie, right? Yeah, there's some examples of my life.
That's a great first date. I hope it was a shared interest between you both.
Yes, it is. Now, perhaps I'm a little more than she is actively looking for it, but both of us are really interested in the research, if you will.
Of course. It's an interesting subject, yeah. And interesting. I like that. Good stuff.
Excellent.
I used to love video stores when I was a kid. I miss video stores.
You could waste hours in a video store and still come out empty-handed.
Yeah. When I was a kid, this is before Blockbusters, so this is just like corner video stores.
Mm-hmm.
And this is in the 80s. I used to go down there and I used to go and get 2 free movies. In those days, you know, you could get any movie you wanted. If you're a little bit too young for that movie, if it was a horror, you know, no problem. You could take them out, no problem.
Yeah, exactly.
So those early ages, I was watching, you name it, all the films. I think my favorite one was the 1982 version of The Thing, John Carpenter's version.
You know, that's one of the movies I've never watched.
This probably one of the best science fiction horror films there is.
You know, it's on my bucket list to watch. I've never got around to it.
You should put that right to the top.
I'm going to now. I'll make it. Everybody talks about it.
It's an interesting fact, actually. The 1982 version has been remade, but there's an original called, I think it's called The Thing from Outer Space.
Yes.
1950s movie. Good, very good. Still very good. But that's where the term keep watching the skies comes from.
Oh.
They coined it in that.
Speaking of that. Oh, okay. I used to watch, I'm dating myself here, back in the 80s, I used to watch Doctor Who.
Uh-huh, yeah.
And there was a fellow that followed up Doctor Who with a very short program, kind of just to kind of bounce out the hour. And he would talk about astronomy and kind of tell you, you know, what's coming up, what's happening in terms of viewing in the sky. He'd always end it with keep looking up, watching the sky. So I wonder if that was...
Yeah, that was Patrick Moore, Sir Patrick Moore, and that was The Sky at Night.
Yes, that's it.
There, that's it. Yeah. So he had a TV show, and it ran for many years. And he was like a backyard astronomer. And then he ends up becoming, probably the world's most famous one. Yeah, Sir Patrick Moore.
Oh, yes. I forgot that's what his name. Yeah, I absolutely loved it. It was great.
Yeah, I used to love that. That's great, Joshua.
Thanks for having me, Nick. Been great talking with you. You know, I wish you all the best and, you know, keep doing what you're doing. I know you hear that a lot, but wow, like it's something special.
Thank you. Yeah, I think it is.
It is hard to find good new account of any of this, really. You know, the grand scope of it, turn something on or need to suggest something. I'll be like, oh, you know what? I've already seen that. I've already read that. I already know, you know, quite a bit about that, unless they put a different spin to it with a different, you know, point of view. You know, I'm just like, okay, well, I've seen it so much and so often. I love having and listening to people's personal accounts. You know, it really verifies things on a different level that's not produced, that's not subject to, you know, this kind of media exploitation, if you will.
Yeah, as soon as things go on the TV, things are changed and it's deliberately done to make it more appealing to the viewers. We don't do that here, obviously. And
yeah,
the stories are coming out. I didn't want ones that people have already heard. I know a lot of people in the field and stuff that are on the TV shows and on the lecture circuit. I don't have any of them. You know, the show is not really for them. It's for just everyday people. And these accounts we have on here are accounts that you would never hear. So I wanted it to be fresh and I wanted it to be different.
I think you could definitely achieve that. Now, what I find interesting, having listened to quite a bit of your content, is the similarity that keep repeating.
Absolutely. And I knew this would form over time. And as the longer we go on, then, you know, you'll hear that more and more. And we don't always try and point things out, but there are similarities which just seem to crop up. It's important because they are little clues, you know, or little pieces of the puzzle that we can maybe form little clusters, you know, and try and get the whole, you know, the bigger picture.
Well, I believe that too. If every little piece gets you a little more clarity, you know, gets you a little bit closer to maybe not understanding an individual experience, but closer to the whole of the phenomenon, if you will.
We may not really get all the answers, you know, we desire, but at least people can take from these accounts and maybe help themselves in some way, you know, if they're dealing with any trauma or any problems. It maybe kind of help them. So people are getting so much from this show.
Absolutely.
Joshua, I really appreciate you coming on and sharing that for our listeners. It was absolutely fascinating.
Welcome the opportunity. And thanks again, Nick. You have a great day and get some sleep.
No problem. I must admit, I'll probably be awake for at least another 2-3 hours yet. I've got a ton of editing to get through, but I will certainly sleep soundly tonight. Thank you, Joshua. It's been great meeting you. Keep in contact, all right? And we will speak soon.
Likewise. Take care.
Okay, take care, my friend. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
I'm Richard Serrett. Join me on Strange Planet for in-depth conversations with the world's top paranormal investigators, alien abductees, Bigfoot trackers, monster hunters, time travelers, alternative archaeologists, remote viewers, and more.
As I was on the way to Area 51, I was stopping on the side of the road and just taking measurements, and I found this one spot where time slowed down by a fraction of a second. It's not supposed to do that.
From the two big categories, animal mutilations and human abductions, you have to conclude that genetic material is being harvested.
Well, I reached for a rifle and I turned and looked, and it was already moving away, and it was descending the bluff. There's no way any human could have went down it. It was probably a 75 degree angle straight down almost.
On Richard Serrett's Strange Planet, we're redefining reality. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.
Do not go any further. Turn around. Go home.
Hello, Poncho. Welcome to the podcast.
Hey, good morning, Nick. How you doing, sir?
Good morning. Thank you for coming on today, and you're calling from New Mexico in the United States.
Yes, sir. Northern New Mexico, to be specific, I guess.
Okay. Now, Poncho, you have some experiences to share with us. Would you like to start at the beginning, please?
Yes, sir. So growing up here, where we grew up, we lived in a trailer, I would say. So the capital of Northern New Mexico is Santa Fe. So about 20 miles north of Santa Fe, we grew up in a trailer there. When I was a child, this part I don't really remember. This is just what my parents told me, that I would always ask why my dad looked different when he would cover me at night. And I don't remember that, you know, and that came up because one day I was running to my room. I don't remember what was going on. We had a hallway down to my bedroom, and I was running. I was upset about something, and my head was, you know, down as I was running as a child again. And I saw someone wearing dark jeans. And so I like looked up, followed this apparition, whatever you want to call it. And it was like someone in overalls. And then as I continued up, I saw a plaid shirt, distinctively like a red plaid shirt underneath that overalls. And then by the time I got like to the neck, you know, head part, there was nothing there. It was, you know, strange, you know, very, very strange. That was like the first thing that I had, you know, that I realized what was going on there. As time went on, as, you know, life went on as a child, I would be in my room and I would feel somebody sit at the foot of my bed. I would literally feel like if a body was there. It was so strange. I would look there and I wouldn't see anything, right? I wouldn't see like anything sitting there. I would just feel it. You know, continuing on, you know, I had an uncle of mine who always like would play real rough with me. He would grab me by my knee or, you know, different things, hold me down, and just keep, you know, as a child, I hated it, right? I thought he was a real mean guy. And I didn't really care for him. He would stay with us from time to time. And one night that he was staying with us, apparently, you know, so there was a lot of things that happened in his trailer. Let's just be clear there. So we nicknamed him Casper, right? He never really hurt anybody. We would hear things move, shot glasses move. My dad had a bar in the back end. There would be, you know, glasses that would move. Just different things all the time, right? So he was dubbed Casper. That's what we called him. So apparently, one night that he was there, the following morning, my uncle was quite upset. He said that I had cut his shirt. And so Casper apparently cut his shirt. You know, I don't know exactly. It was like perfectly taken off at the seams. It was just so strange. And, you know, my parents kind of got upset at me because they thought, because they knew how I felt about him, I did that because he was there. I did not do that. Same thing with an aunt of mine, right? My Aunt Vicky, she was the same thing with me, just very mean. She would get there and be like, why don't you do dishes? Why don't you do this? Why don't you do that? Just, you know, real, real mean, you know? And same thing. She was staying in my room. I was sleeping in the living room. Anytime that we would have guests like that, I would sleep in the living room and, you know, family would sleep in my room. Same thing. Her pants were ripped right up the middle in the seam, like perfectly cut in the seam. Same thing. She said that night that I was messing with her, that I would go in there and, like, you know, mess with her feet, move her stuff, that she couldn't sleep because I was messing with her. And she told my mom that it was me. And it was certainly not me. So at that point, the family was like, well, Casper likes me. Like, he protects me. And that's when they kind of brought two and two together from when I was younger, you know, younger than that, that he would take care of me in the room, that he would cover me. He would sit at my bedside to watch over me. So it was like, you know, dubbed my ghost. He took care of me. Final thing about Casper, I guess I should say, is when my dad was real sick when I was around 10, 11 years old. He got really, really sick. He was in the hospital for a good while. When I would get dropped off at the bus walking home, there was a dirt road up to our trailer there. My dad would watch me from the road, right? He would have the door open. He smoked, so he would be at the door smoking, you know, watching me. And he did that, you know, always and forever while, you know, when I got off the bus. So at this particular time, I know for a fact he was not home because he was in the hospital. So I was walking up and I look up and I saw my dad. You know, my dad was at the door and he was watching me. I was so excited. I thought maybe he got home that day and they were just surprising me. So I was watching my dad. I'm running up the dirt road, so excited to see him. Get there, get closer. And then, you know, the next time I look up, he's not there. No one's there. I get to the house. I open the door. The door was locked. You know, I thought, like, why is it locked? You know, my dad's here. I open the door, looking around, nobody's here. You know, no one's not here, but no one was at the house. It was just, strange. Nobody was there. And he eventually my dad passed when I was around 18 years old. We ended up moving out of that area when I was about 20, I would say, and really have not had any, you know, ghostly experiences or anything since. So it was just it's pretty unique. Childhood, I guess. And there was a lot more that happened, you know. Those are just kind of the more specific stuff that happened to me, I guess. And that was always kind of like all my family, everybody knows about Casper, everybody knew about him. We had family that wouldn't even visit because, like, one other time, I guess I should say, is we had some friends, my parents had some friends over. They had a child, you know. We were playing around, we were hanging out, we were outside, they were inside. Apparently Casper showed himself in the hallway, kind of similar to what I saw. My dad's buddy saw him, and they got the kid and they left. They never came back. So it was just things like that. Like, everybody knew about our house and it being haunted, if you will. But nothing negative, nothing ever happened other than my uncle and my aunt. I guess that would be negative. I don't know how something like that could tear. But unless I was doing it as a sleepwalker, you know. But I really don't feel I was. So anyway, so that kind of wraps up my paranormal crap, if you will. So another thing, so when I was, I want to say, this was back in 2002, I would say, I was about, about 20 years old. I was with my girlfriend, she's now my wife, her sister, and a buddy of mine who was dating her sister. We were spending it was like a Saturday or a Friday, something like that, summer day. We were at the Abiki Lake, you know, swimming. A lot of people would swim there, boat there, fish there, whatnot. We were hanging out over there. My wife's uncle was also there. You know, it was just kind of like a family affair. He ended up meeting a girl there while we were, you know, during that day. This is my wife's uncle. Ended up meeting a girl there. She ended up spending the day with us there. As we were, you know, as the day was ending, we were going to head home. Her uncle was going to take that girl and drop her off at home. We felt he was maybe... he shouldn't be driving. We weren't sure if he was intoxicated or not. I don't want to say intoxicated, but we followed him, right? We wanted to make sure he got home safe. And so we were following him, and past you know, south of the lake, there's a little store there called Bodie's. Across from that store is like a mountain, I guess. I don't know really what you'd call it, a mountain range that has houses and whatnot. Apparently, this is where that girl lived. So he pulled right. He went in there to take her. We went, you know, we turned in, followed him. I went down the road, turned around, came back. We were kind of just waiting. And I can't remember exactly who saw it first, but, you know, if we're waiting at the mountain to the left, there was three bright lights. All I remember is seeing three lights in the form of a triangle. I wouldn't say a triangle, but I guess wrapped around, like three lights, I guess. I don't really want to say triangle, but if you're looking at something sideways, you could see the three lights. Like the two on the side are kind of farther back, I guess. That's what I'm trying to say about triangle. And when we saw that, my girlfriend was on the passenger seat. All I remember is her like, no. And she like jumped in the floorboard, covered her head. She was like freaked out. My buddy in the back and my girlfriend's sister were in the back. I told them to watch it, you know, because I wanted to follow it. It was like slowly going towards the roadway. But then again, it was in this mountain area. It didn't make any sense why it would be going the way it was going without hitting trees. There was no sound. There was no like roadway up there, nothing. So I started going down the road. I, you know, obviously not trying to crash or anything. It was darker. So I was glancing at it when I could. The two in the back stayed watching it the whole time. In preparation for this podcast, I actually, we had dinner with my sister-in-law a couple of days ago, and I asked her, like, how do you remember? Like, what did you see? She says that she remembers seeing, like, it was the dome thing. She couldn't see anything physical, but she could see, like, she didn't see that it was a craft itself, but she saw that there was something there. I don't know exactly how to explain it, but. She said she saw that. I tried to reach out to my buddy too. He just says she remembers the light. That was a while back. I was trying to reach out to him recently to see what he remembers. But, you know, talking to him in the past, he just remembers seeing the light. We followed it as much as we could. I got to the road hoping that it would come across the other side of the mountain. And it was gone. We didn't see it again. When we got to the house, my wife's uncle, we were talking about it. We were like, you know, freaked out about it or whatever. And he mentioned, he goes, did you guys see that? And he said something about lights also. So I don't know exactly what he saw on his perspective, but he did see whatever we saw. But I don't know. That was just kind of one of those things that, you know, my initial one, my important one that I was going to talk about, I always thought was like a once in a lifetime thing. Right. And then we saw this. So it was kind of interesting. Never seen anything after that. That was what, like I said, about 20 years ago. But okay, I guess for the main reason that I reached out to you, Nick, would be I want to say this was probably about in 1997. I was about 15 years old, I'd imagine, 14, 15 years old. My uncle is an avid fisherman. My cousin, a couple years younger than me, also very avid fisherman. Fisher boy, I guess you can call him right now, obviously a fisherman. But anyway, back then, we always fished. Every time they would go somewhere, they would always invite me with them. I'm grateful for that. I love my uncle. So he, it was my uncle, his son, myself, my uncle's buddy, a female, and her daughter. It was five of us. We went night fishing at Santa Cruz Lake here in northern New Mexico. We, I want to say it was probably like early to mid summer, because I recall that we really didn't have nothing more than like a light jacket on, like a windbreaker type thing. So that's around the time of the year it was. We got to the lake. It was still daybreak, you know, but in the late evening, you could see what was going on. Obviously, it was, you know, to dock and everything, get in the boat. We did that. We got on the boat. We went out to our spot. We did a little bit of, if I recall, we did a little bit of like slow trolling getting there. Maybe not, but I just do know we were kind of getting there real slow. We got to the spot that we were going to be at. Some locals might know it as the second wall. I guess we were right around the second wall of the lake, not necessarily in the center, but kind of, you know, closer to the wall, but in the center of the lake, if that makes any sense. And we anchored there. And by the time we were anchoring, it was already getting dark, and you know, it was getting dark. There was I recall at least two other boats on the water at the time. When we were docking, there was still some cars there, you know, some fishermen on the shore. So there was people around. we started fishing, right? We put the light on the water. We had a little floating light with styrofoam, and we started fishing. We weren't getting any bites or anything. Just kind of, it was just there, and then started fishing. We started getting bites, started catching, started doing real well, right? It was dark at this point. I would say maybe 30 minutes into it, 45 minutes into it, we started catching. We were doing real well. I remember my uncle's friend's daughter was so excited because we were catching so many fish. It was nice. It was just doing really well. And then it just stopped, fishing. All the biting stopped. We didn't get any more. It just like a light switch went off. So we're sitting there. My uncle, I remember he says something to the effect of, like, look at that, or do you guys see that? Something like that. And I remember I was next to him, right? He was standing up holding his rod. He had his knee his foot like on the chair where he was like resting on his knee. And I remember looking up at him and then looking up to the sky. There was this, it was a light. It was like a red light that was transitioning colors to like a purple, green maybe. I can't even explain how the lights looked. It was just, the lights were transitioning and changing to themselves. It looked so far away, but at the same time, it looked so close that you could like reach up and touch it. And it was just strange, man. I just thinking back, it was just there. And then it slowly started to move, to the right of us. It was just, moving to the right. And then it started moving opposite of that. There's an overlook at the Santa Cruz Lake there. It started, this craft, I guess, was, this light was slowly going behind the overlook. When it got to the overlook, it started to go down, and as soon as the light got out of view, it lit up in the back. It was just bright, bright out there, like day. It was just really, really bright back there. Next thing I know, the craft's above us again, the light's above us again, and it starts going slowly to the right and then just takes off. It's gone. My uncle says something like, all right, get that anchor. I get one anchor. The friend gets the other anchor. We're pulling him up. I remember my cousin being kind of hysterical. I remember the other little girl pissed off because we're leaving. She's like, why are we going? We're catching so much fish. It's as if she didn't know what just happened or she didn't see. It was just weird. And my uncle was, you could tell, you could just see him. He looked pretty scared, right? Him and the other adult were talking. Couldn't really hear what they were saying. We go to dock the boat, and there's nobody there. I remember thinking to myself, at the most that we've been here is about an hour. We were in the area that if anybody left the lake, we would have seen them leave. And I always thought it was so strange that nobody was there when we left. And it was strange to me, but I never really put much thought to it. And now that I've been hearing different podcasts and different things about people talking about missing time, I tried asking my uncle if what the time was when we left, like if he realized that we had some time missing or something. And every time I talk to him about it, he just kind of smiles. He doesn't really, he'll tell me what he remembers as far as the lights, basically the same exact thing I told you now, but nothing more than that. So I don't know if maybe I just was so into the fishing and those three boats and everybody else left by the time we left or what. But I mean, like I tell you, we were there maybe an hour, hour 15, after we saw that, we bolted, we were out of there. So I don't know how those people would have left without us seeing. So that's why I say possible missing time. I don't know. Either way, that was a pretty crazy night. I think about it often. It's just one of those things that, like I said earlier, I always thought it was a once in a lifetime opportunity to see a quote unquote UFO. And then obviously till we saw the one here, with my wife and sister-in-law 20 years later. But that's pretty much my story, I guess, my experience.
Yeah, that's certainly an interesting one. So there was five of you on that boat.
There was five of us. Yes, sir.
Five of you on that boat. Okay. And it was early evening when you went out fishing?
Right. Yeah. We were there purposely to do night fishing. So we got there in the late evening, while there was still daylight, so we could get set up and get the boat on the water and whatnot. And we did this often, right? It wasn't like our first time doing it. It was, that was the last time though, I believe we went night fishing over there. But yes, it was early evening when we got there and we stayed fishing till it got dark. And then we left after we saw that light.
And you were in the north end of the lake.
more center, but yes, I guess you could say the south end of the lake. The north end is like the dock where you put your boat in the water. So
right.
The north end of the lake has a I think it's called Evans Creek. No, I can't remember. There's a creek that comes in. So we were closer to that area of the creek.
Okay, I might get you when you got a chance. If you just if you can pinpoint on the map roughly where you remember you were.
Okay.
Like where the car park is, and then where you saw this object, and the direction that it left.
Okay. Yeah. You mean like on a Google Map? And I see what you're saying. Yeah, I can do that.
Yeah, that's very interesting. And of course, your uncle told you to pull up anchor, and you left, and there was no other people in the car park. Everyone had already gone.
Yeah, that was so strange. Even at that time, I remember thinking it was weird because we were not there long. We were not there long at all. And like I said, I always thought I never knew what missing time was, or that it was a thing, if you will, until I started hearing podcasts, right? Hearing people talk about missing time. And that's when I told my wife, actually. I was like, because she knew about that. I told her about it after we saw those lights in Abiquiu. I wonder if we had a missing time. This is recently, obviously not back then. When I'm telling her recently, I'm saying, I'm wondering, she jokes with me. She goes, yeah, you were abducted, you were probed, that kind of stuff, obviously. But, she's not jokingly, not really giving me real grief, just, husband and wife fun, right? So, I mean, I just wonder. I wish I was older, I guess, when this happened, because I was, 14, 15, I wasn't that young, but at that time I wasn't paying attention to the time. We didn't have cell phones where we could see the time. I didn't wear a watch at that time. I have to believe that my uncle has to know what time it was when we left. And I have to believe that he also noted that, I know my cousin remembered that there was no other people there, that much I know. So I'm sure he talked to his dad about it. I just, he doesn't give me details. He doesn't really talk about it. He's older now. And this past family reunion that we had this past summer, I kind of, was fishing with, not fishing with him, but what's the word? Like I was picking his brain, trying to get it out of him. And he just like kind of smiles. He just gives me this smile. And I'm like, what does that mean? like, tell me. So I don't know. I know my aunt told me that he talked to somebody officially about it, or that he had to meet with somebody about it, or something to that effect. And she doesn't really know much about that. And I tried to ask him about that. And he just doesn't share. I don't know what it is that, maybe he's just messing with me because he is that kind of guy, like a trickster. So maybe he's just having fun with me and doesn't really remember or doesn't know, but who knows?
And he just simply won't talk about it.
He'll acknowledge it. He'll acknowledge the lights. He'll acknowledge there, but he will not talk about it after that. He will not. And all I really want to know from him is if he recalls what time it was when he left. If it was, 2 in the morning, 10 o'clock at night. Because here in the summertime, it gets dark about 7:45, 8 at night, So I would say that's probably around the time we were there. And I would think that within an hour or so, 9:30, 9 o'clock, that we would have left, he would have made, he would have noted that. He would have seen it or known if it was 2 in the morning or whatever. And that's kind of what it felt like being in the truck. Because I remember my cousin asking him, like, by the time we got in the truck and we were, safe, I guess, he was asking him, what other scary stuff did you have growing up, Dad? Because he was in the military. He went to Vietnam War, different things. And he told us a story about when he was running in a field in a horse, like he ran like basically into a white horse and scared the hell out of him. I remember that conversation as we were leaving the park, leaving the lake. And so I don't know. I believe he asked him on what time it was. And he just doesn't talk about it.
I mean, something must have spooked him for to pull anchor and head back to shore. Do you remember if you caught many fish?
We did. Yeah, we did catch quite a bit. I like I said, and we were catching them pretty often. Like they were biting well. We got a good spot. We must have hit a good school of fish, and we were catching. And then what the weird thing was is that it just stopped. And right around the same time that we saw what we saw, the fishing just stopped. The other thing that I think back, like in hindsight, about that little girl that was with us, how she was probably around the same age as my cousin, probably about 10, 11-ish, I guess 12-ish, how she was just so upset that we were leaving. To to me, we were leaving at the moment that we were catching those fish, if that makes sense. So she was just like, why are we leaving? We're catching. That's another thing that was strange to me. She just, as if she didn't see that 3-4 minute sighting that we just saw with all those lights. You know what I mean? That part also gets me, not at the time, but looking back at it, why was she not in shock or scared or wondering what the heck it was that we just saw? I always thought that was weird too.
That's an interesting one. An interesting thing is it's very close to Los Alamos. Was what?
Right.
30
yeah.
miles?
Something like that, yeah. It's Los Alamos is right up the road. That's another thing with all these podcasts that I've been listening about. I never realized how involved Los Alamos is with this UFO world, right? You know, all the different history and like this is right here under my nose this entire time, and it's only the last year and a half, 2 years that I've noticed, you know?
I mean, absolutely, yeah, it is pretty well involved in all that. And you didn't really have an interest in the subject?
No, not at all. I mean, not that deal at the Santa Cruz Lake, of course, always kept me wondering, but it never, I never really put much thought into it until that day with my buddy. We were camping and, hey, did you watch that Bob Lazar documentary? And I was like, who's Bob Lazar, you know? And that pretty much was the spear of the rabbit hole that you just kind of hit me. And then I realized, with the government doing that acknowledgement, and I'm like, wait a minute, we have a Star Force now, or what's it called? Star Force, yeah?
Oh, Space Force.
Space Force, there you go. I'm like, we have a brand new military branch. They're acknowledging UFOs. You know, I saw that thing back when we saw that thing. We saw those lights. I'm like thinking to myself, this is real. There's definitely something going on, and, you know, we're probably going to find out what the hell it is here, you know, soon enough. And that's kind of what got me. The whole Bob Lazar thing is the other thing that kind of got me when he's talking about working up here and that rocket car and being in the area. You know, this is a small community. The community I live in really supports Los Alamos, if you will. I mean, not in the sense that we support Los Alamos. It's like the blue collar workers, you know, everyone lives down here, goes up there and works. Of course, the scientists and whatnot, you know, live up there, but it's like everybody else is down here. I would probably, out of 10 of my family or friends, at least 8 of them work in Los Alamos, if that makes sense. You know what I mean? So what I'm trying to say is the people here are might as well be an extension of Los Alamos in a sense. So we hear things, is what I'm getting at. And I do remember vaguely about a rocket car, and I never knew it was Bob Lazar or, you know, any of that crap. I just remember hearing about a rocket car. So when my buddy told me about it, because he's a couple years older than I, and he says too, he remembers as a kid hearing about the rocket car, and I'm like, you know what, I do too. And so that's kind of what intrigued me about this, about Bob Lazar. And then of course, once I saw that Jeremy Corbell documentary, and you know, that just kind of got me hooked, and yeah, there I went. So pretty much any free time I have now, for the most part, I'm listening to some type of podcast, even outside doing yard work or whatever. I'll have your podcast or Willis or something going on, just to, I don't know, it's just interesting to me. I really want to see if anybody, like those three fishermen or those three boats that were there that day with them, they had to have seen it. I went to those MUFON, or not MUFON, but those, I can't remember right now, but you know how you can log what you see? I went over there to see if I could find it, but I don't know exactly when it was. You know, and when I asked my uncle, I don't get any information from them. I'm just kind of going off recollection. It had to have been the summer of 96 or 97, right around there. So I checked that, right? And I'm not finding anything around that time. And I know it couldn't have been sooner than that, because I did find out from him when he bought the boat. So it couldn't have been before that. And then, of course, my dad passed away shortly after that. So it was never, couldn't have been past that. So there's a good little 3-year window that it had to have been, you know, between May and August. And there's nothing that I can find there, so it's not reported. I guess I should report it on there too. Maybe there's somebody doing the same thing I am, trying to figure out if anybody else saw it. I guess I should add it.
Yeah, you should. Yeah, I always say to people, you know, even if, you know, your account is historic, was several years ago, no matter how long ago it was, certainly go to the National Reporting Center or MUFON and report it, because, you know, there could be other people out there which haven't reported it, and they're kind of looking for confirmation as well.
Yeah, there's got to be. I don't know, man. There was people there. The more I think about it, it just felt late when we left, and there was nobody there when we left. I don't know. I don't even know what to say, man. Like, it's just weird. It's just so weird.
Yeah, very strange. A very strange experience that was, Poncho.
Yep, absolutely, man. I'm grateful for it in the sense that hey, I could say I saw a UFO, right? And I'm not concerned to, you know, I'm not embarrassed or whatever to say that, you know. But it's just one of those things that, like, hey, you know, I saw that, you know. I'm not one of the ones always wondering, you know. That makes me feel, I guess, I don't know if relieved makes sense, but it's something that I don't have to worry about, I guess, in the bucket list of life.
I hear you. Good stuff. That is certainly an interesting encounter. And to our listeners, you know, if you've experienced anything in that area, the same as Poncho, you know, maybe you were fishing on the same lake, or you've heard stories of strange goings on, get in contact, because I'm sure Poncho would like some answers.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you, Nick. I appreciate that. And hopefully someone will, you know.
Hopefully, yeah. Sometimes you're basically relying on someone which has been on the lake at the same time back in the night is listening to the show. You know, it'd be rare if that actually happened. Plus, you know, those individuals could be a lot older now, if, you know, even if they're still around. So, but it's rare. But just now and again, you know, I did have one from a while ago where this account happened in the 80s and someone said I was on that road at the same time and I saw this. So people do, you know, it does happen now and again. But, you know, if we can even just get more people that have had experiences in that particular area.
Yep. Yeah, the Abiquiú area, we saw those lights I saw, like I said, three lights. My sister-in-law said she saw I can't think of the word, right, that I'm trying to say. She saw like the silhouette of what something was there, as if the light were kind of making it appear, if that makes sense, kind of if it was like a see-through type of deal. But what I'm getting at is in Abiquiú, in that area, you know, Georgia O'Keeffe land, there's stories. Lots of stories of different stuff going on there. Even the Abiquiú Lake about fireballs jumping on the water. There's all, and that's just stories of me hearing, you know, from the locals. I've never experienced that other than those lights that we saw that time. But there's a lot in Abiquiú and in that area that's happening. And so, in my opinion, when I saw those lights, I thought there was like a vehicle or something up there, right? But it's as if those things were floating with no regard to trees or mountains. It's as if those things weren't even there. Like if the trees and mountains didn't even exist and this thing was just slicing right through it. That's how those lights were moving. My wife was so freaked out. She said she recalls the lights and just she just jumped in the floorboard. My buddy and my sister-in-law, they watched it. I remember telling him, you know, watch it. Don't let it leave your sight, you know, because I was driving, like I said. And I was hoping to catch on the other side to see like what it was. Oh, it's a spaceship or whatever, you know, it's a craft. And no, it just disappeared. But I've never heard of lights in that area, but I've heard of fireballs is where I'm getting at. And so that makes me feel like when I thought it was a once in a lifetime opportunity to see that UFO back when I was 14, 15, 16 years old, and I got to see this other one, you know, 10 years later, I don't know. It makes me feel like I've heard people on your show say like they were, it was intended for them. I don't feel like those three lights were intended for me, but I feel like maybe I'm able, or we're on that level. I don't know how that makes sense. I guess it's just I'm rambling anymore. It just feels, I feel like we were supposed to, I guess, if that makes sense. I don't know.
I know what you're saying. Yeah, I know what you're saying. You were in the right place at the right time. So, you know, so to speak.
Yeah, I guess so. I just, like the feeling I have about it, I just can't put it into words. It's more like assurance. I don't know. Yeah, but you're right. Yeah, right place, right time. And it was cool that Billy was able to see it up there too. So
good stuff, Poncho.
I appreciate you, Nick. Thank you so much. And I'll certainly keep in touch. I may be interested in doing that because, you know, I guess we'll see how much more I end up. I'm going to try with my uncle at least one more time. And now for Christmas, I'm just going to flat out tell him, you know, and when I intend to tell him, and then once I get with him, I can't just say, hey, you know what I mean? It's just one of those things. I don't know if his presence just kind of, you know, I just kind of tuck tail or what it is, but I'm going to just straight up ask him and see, even if it's just, you know, end around like, hey, what time was it when we left? Do you remember what time it was when we left? Something like that.
Sure, absolutely. I mean, when you speak to him, maybe, you know, if he won't divulge too much, maybe just say, you know, just give me yes or no answers, you know, and just maybe try that.
That's true. That's true. Like, was it after midnight when we left? Yes or no? Yeah. Okay. That's a good point. Appreciate that.
One blink for yes, two for no.
There you go. There's a lot of episodes that I have ahead. You know, I look forward to all those episodes if I'm getting that. So I appreciate that. And no rush. I mean, I thank you for that. I look forward to hearing from you. And that sounds good, man. I really do appreciate you, Nick. Thank you so much for what you're doing. I've heard other people tell you what you're doing is is very important, and I believe that, because like you're connecting all these dots, you know, you're bringing all of us people together, and I think that's good. You know, allowing someone to say their account without filters is important, and I appreciate that.
Yeah, you're more than welcome, and you're absolutely right. It is important. Poncho, I really appreciate you coming on and sharing that interesting encounter for our listeners.
I appreciate you, sir. Thank you very much.
No problem. You take care and go have some breakfast.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, I got to go get courthouse time after that for sure.
Good stuff. All right. Take care of yourself.
Absolutely, sir. I appreciate you.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you, my friend.
Bye-bye.
That's all for this week. Keep updated and connected with the show on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And if you have an encounter that you'd like to share on the podcast, you can email me at ufochronicles@gmail.com, or you can reach out to me via the contact page on my website, ufochroniclespodcast.com. A big thank you to Joshua and Poncho for sharing tonight, and thank you all for listening. I will be back next week. Till then, stay safe and keep watching the skies. Goodbye.